will say that I have shed innocent blood. What's blood for, if not for shedding?
I just can't take no pleasure in killing.
Just some things you gotta do. Don't mean you have to like it.
There is nothing to worry about. You're gonna be just fine. I'm your number one fan.
Let her get away, Mommy.
Welcome to another edition of Horrifying My Friends. I'm horror host Trev. Joining me, as always, is the theme queen herself, producer Kate.
Hi.
And making his first appearance on the show, a horror fanatic, much like the creature himself, Shelby. Shelby Green, I should say.
How you doing, buddy?
So you were kind of, we have actually not met in person before,
mm-hmm.
which... it's a little strange, but it's like, it's 2021, so it's kind of like the times of like digital, you know, it's almost like catfish and all this other shit.
Yeah, absolutely.
But we met and we started noticing that we had similar interests with metal, with horror movies and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, I gotta have Shelby on and talk about like some horror movies, man, because he's got the horror sleeves. He's got fucking anybody that has a Sid Haig tattoo on their fist. I'm like, I'm in, man.
Absolutely.
So I wanted to get like some of your history of horror. Like we all have that way into the genre. Mine was that some of the 90s slashers, regular listeners will know this, but like some of the 90s slashers that people diss on like now, but like the Scream 2, the Scream 3, mm-hmm. that I Know What You Did Last Summer, you know, with all these right. cute teens that are getting picked
off. Urban Legend.
Oh, dude, Urban
which,
Legend.
Which, in my opinion, is an underrated classic. It doesn't get a lot of credit.
Ugh.
That opening scene with Brad Dourif and all that, yeah. and the rain and shit. Like, yeah.
I'm about to jump across this table on Shelby.
Oh,
dude, Urban Urban Legend is a fucking awesome movie.
Like, people don't talk. The sequel is so-so, but, like, it's like for 90 slashers, I'm like, that's... I'm like, why is that movie not get talked about? It's got Robert Englund in it.
Oh,
it's,
yeah.
Rebecca, I can't say her last name, but she's a... I mean, if
Gayheart.
You talk,
Rebecca Gayheart,
she's,
yeah.
like... when it's revealed, spoiler alert, when it's revealed that she's the killer, it's like, holy shit, you don't expect that. Like, okay. in her face, because she goes from all happy and this and that to like, nutcase. And she's got the curly ass blonde hair that's real thick, you know yeah, what I mean?
As every woman can do in a split second, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I forgot.
You better watch yourself.
The producer.
And Daniel Harris is in it too.
Yeah, a movie full of like, just horror legends, you know, from yesteryear mm-hmm. and the,
yep.
the current ones yeah. of that time. But what was your kind of entrance into the genre?
For horror?
Yeah.
It was more like, how can I say this? I grew up watching pro wrestling a lot too.
Mm-hmm.
And as you can tell, the guy on my arm here,
the Undertaker, yeah.
Taker's like my go-to for everything. And it was kind of introduced, like I saw, my dad used to take me to wrestling matches all the time as a kid. And we went and saw Taker when I was probably about 4 or 5 years old. And mm-hmm. I was hooked on Taker. Well, my little brother... went to Blockbuster one night and we were picking movies out and he was probably like 4, I was probably 6 at the time and we were picking movies and I went to the horror section and I picked up Halloween 4.
Oh,
my
nice.
First, like, and it's weird, the first Halloween uh-huh. movie, I didn't get the fridge, I got the fourth one.
Uh-huh.
I got the fourth one and immediately, what I don't know what it was, but it attracted me and it hooked me. Uh-huh. Michael was the first one that really hooked me.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think the second one I remember seeing as a kid, I think, was the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Cause you go,
my favorite of all time.
Which, yeah. And, like, it was like, okay, like, I immediately was hooked. Mm-hmm. And it was, like, from day forward. And I was always on slashers.
Mm-hmm.
And as the older I got, I started, like, looking into body horror. Body horror. Paranormal. You know, creature features. There's other styles of horror films. Even like when you get older, you realize like films like The Terminator's technically a slasher.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Aliens that everybody says is science fiction. No, it's gothic
mm-hmm.
horror.
Mm-hmm.
The first Predator's a horror film.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I make the argument that The Crow, my favorite movie ever,
oh, yeah.
that's basically a horror film if you really look at it, the way it's shot, the way it, the tone of it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's so many, there's like horror gets a bad rap. But it's actually like there's so many films that use horror elements, so that's why I'm such a big fan of the genre.
Oh yeah, we've come up against that on the show a couple times, like with The Crow and like stuff like Seven. Seven's a fucking horror movie.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean that scene where they walk into the bedroom and that body, like yeah. I hope that wasn't makeup. I hope that was fake. Jesus.
That's funny that you bring up wrestling this quickly, because that was one of my questions, like, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a definite overlap between wrestling and horror, like horror fans.
Absolutely.
Why do you think that is, though? Do you think it's like the...
Outcasts. I think wrestling fans are made fun of. Like, you watch that fake shit? Well, do you like movies? Yeah. Okay, then you expect movies are real? No, they're not. And if you go to Day of the Dead conventions, there's always some wrestlers there. I think because the crowd... Wrestling fans and horror fans are some of the most loyal fan bases you can have.
Mm-hmm.
If you piss them off, you will hear the wrath of it.
Yeah, but fanatics, right?
Fanatics. And I think that their collection stuff, and I think they like that stuff. I mean, look at the action figures, the toys, the merchandise. Mm-hmm. A lot of people wear like the 90s wrestling merchandise. A lot of people wear the NWO stuff still. A lot of people wear the Austin 316 shirts. I think that's what it is. And you see a lot of people now with horror merchandise taking off the way it has over the last 10 years. It's you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. it just balances it out, I think.
Oh, for sure. There's tons of shit to buy.
There's, I think, a commonality between the two as an outsider, I guess, since mm-hmm. I was never into wrestling. And just recently with the podcast, obviously, I'm mm-hmm. getting into horror, but mm-hmm. There's a theater to it all.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure.
That's different than other genres, like, especially horror.
Suspending your disbelief, like, suspending your belief and stuff like that. Right. Like, okay, I'm willing mm-hmm. to kind of just set back mm-hmm. and absolutely. Enjoy the show kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So what type of films scare you? For me, I don't know. Like, nothing. You posted about leg day earlier today. Nothing is scarier than fucking leg day.
Fuck a leg day.
But
hashtag fuck it. I mean it from the bottom of my heart. And I actually was a quick leg day. I tried to get in and out because I was like, I had to do something today because I'm a time fanatic. When I was like, okay, I got to be here for this. I got to mm-hmm. be here for that. I got to get up early. I got to make some money. But I was like, I've got to be at this podcast. I've got to be here. So I was like... I busted my ass get through leg day. It was like a quick 30 minutes.
He wouldn't even skip leg day for you.
I haven't, absolutely.
Dude, I haven't lifted it.
Dude, I was back in March. I was almost 280 pounds. Now I'm down to 235, 240. So
you need to get back up there to 280 though.
Travis,
let's hit some of these Chinese buffets here,
bro. Let me tell you something. I've been throwing out a couple Chinese buffets. You better be careful what you're asking for, brother.
Lo mein plate.
Absolutely.
So
pork and chicken.
So yeah, another thing that we like you said about the merch, like mm-hmm. the horror merch. Mm-hmm. There's always something to buy. You see these little fucking figurines over here that are like $20 and $30 a pop,
mm-hmm.
but it's like fright rags and stuff like that. That's mm-hmm. one. That's another thing. Yeah, you got the House of a Thousand Corpses.
HorrorMerch.com, Cravity Colors. I'm ready for fright. My fright rags just sent me an email. My Halloween Kills merch is coming in, and they're releasing on the 13th. They're releasing their Halloween T-shirts again. So you know I'm gonna snag every one of them. Yeah. So you know, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Oh yeah, but
you guys are like twins.
Yeah,
we've got a little similarity.
I should just go and let you.
Anyway, what's funny is that so we kind of like met each other through Jared Easterbrook.
Oh, Bones, J Bone. Yeah. What up, J Bone?
Yeah. So you're a little bit younger than I think. Like, what year did you graduate?
2012.
Did you go to Ben Davis?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Yeah, we're like 09. So yeah, I graduated with Jared. You know, Robert Hyde, Jordan Stepp, like mm-hmm. all these guys.
Yep.
Like Russell Beers. I know.
Yeah, I know
like,
Russ. I know Russ.
Yeah,
yeah, but I know, unfortunately,
yeah, kind of twins. I know we grew up in the same area and stuff, West Siders and stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't know. So you were talking about that you were in the early processes of, and it's a long process, but, you know, still, like, early processes of starting up a podcast.
Mm-hmm.
What did you want to talk about, or what did you plan on that podcast
being? Well, I actually have got two planned. Basically, okay. I want to do one by myself because my scheduling, dude, will work. It's hard because, you know, you work nights. You don't have days. Like, you know what I mean? It's harder at my job. And I make good money what I do, but it can be a little time consuming. Mm-hmm. And I got two of mine and my buddy want to do one for about strictly about pro wrestling. Mm-hmm. And then I want to do one based on what I want to talk about, but it would be more strictly on things that I'm about. Mm-hmm. Horror movies, I would talk about, like, anything but personal matters in life with the way society is right now.
Yeah.
There's no need for it. I try to have a good time and enjoy stuff. So there's certain things I want to talk about, like stuff that I like. Mm-hmm. And have people on that I know that they're friends of the family.
Mm-hmm.
People I grew up with, certain people I know through, like, through killer flicks.
And I will be on to talk about anything that you need me to talk about.
I would love to have you on, Travis. Thank you.
I'll get on there and talk about conspiracies and shit.
Yeah. You know, we can have a whole discussion about that for a different time. But,
he's going to get HMF canceled.
Oh, yeah. So this will be the section of the show when I kind of talk a little bit, you know, intro the movie, stuff like that. Then we can get into this bonkers-ass flick. Producer Cater, you ready to go?
Mm. Yeah, I'm ready.
Okay, so this is Prince of Darkness, directed by horror master John Carpenter, released in 1987. a group of graduate students and scientists uncover an ancient canister. It's really like a lava lamp kind of thing. In an abandoned church, and when they open the container, they inadvertently unleash a strange liquid and an evil force on all of humanity. Starring Donald Pleasance, of course, the legendary Donald Pleasance as the priest. Worked with Carpenter on Halloween as the great character Dr. Loomis, of course. Also in Escape from New York as the president. Have you ever seen that one?
Yes, I have.
Okay, I was like, wrestlers, dude. Like
Ox Baker's in it. Yeah. Ox Baker's in it.
Yeah, Ox Baker. Ox Baker was actually in love with my mom at one point, believe it or not.
Really?
Yeah, I always tease Bub that Bub's it. Really Ox Baker's
I believe it.
Kid.
Heart punch.
Victor Wong as Professor Howard Byrock. Mm-hmm. Byrock.
That caught my attention, by the way.
Was it Barack?
Yeah. Barack, yeah. Barack?
That actually caught my attention. I was like, oh, that's the guy from Tremors, and that's the guy from the three ninja movies in Kiss. Yeah. I was a kid. I was like, okay, all right.
What did you make me watch that he's in?
Big Trouble.
Big Trouble in Little China. Mm-hmm.
Big Trouble in China.
Jameson Parker as Brian Marsh. I don't know how many of these I'm going to list off. I'm definitely going to get to Alice Cooper as the street schizo.
Was that? I thought that was him. Yeah. That's what I thought it was. I thought that was Cooper. For real. I was like, is that Alice Cooper? While I was watching it.
It's fucking bonkers because, like, I don't plan out this kind of shit, but it's like, I just saw Alice Cooper in Ace Frehley last night, and, like, yeah, I spent, like, $150 on shirts, right? And I'm like, right, why do I do it? Why do I do it?
Right.
I almost, like, Alice Cooper is that good of a show, though, where, like, I almost, because I bought the shirts after the show, and I was like, I feel like I owe him money, like, after seeing that show. Mm-hmm. Okay, so fast facts. Carpenter's return to horror, like you said, after Big Trouble in Little China. You got to remember that Carpenter was a successful film director, but he was nowhere near as praised as he is now. Mm-hmm. And he's kind of like a tell-it-like-it-is guy, like a crotchety old man. Like, someone will interview him now, and he'll be like, they'll be like, dude, The Thing fucking changed my life. And he's like, where the fuck were you back then? Because it was a bomb, and, you know, I had to do, like, all these other shit.
Yeah, speaking of that, like, I don't understand that. Like, I'm just side mention, like, today, that is like the standard for practical effects. That's when you go do CGI and horror, you go to The Thing and watch. Like, that is what you watch. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I'm watching this. I was like 13, 14 years old first time watching, and I fell in love with it. I'm like, why is this? Why did this film get bombed the way it did? I don't understand it. Like, seriously, I will never understand that at the time. Like, that movie is great. The ending is like, these guys are going to die. They don't know what's going to happen. Like, it's a great film.
Yeah, and it's like, it's weird how that shit works, how time affects kind of some of that shit. Because, like, you agreed on that, too. Like, you love The fucking Thing, right?
I do, yes.
Yeah. I mean, it, like, it's probably a top 5 horror movie of all time.
Mm-hmm. For a lot of people.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's just, its messages are pretty evergreen.
Mm-hmm. It's definitely in my top 10 to 15, probably. There's a long list of horror films. I argue with that, man.
So, like I said, he returns to horror after Big Trouble, and he signs a deal to direct this for $3 million. It's a tiny budget, but he keeps creative control. Like I said, he's kind of like a he has to go back to the indie director. So the movie was shot in just over 30 days. Like I said, tiny, tiny budget, limited resources. A lot of the beginning of the film was shot at Carpenter's alma mater, USC. I know you're a big Louisville guy. This is the second film in what John Carpenter calls his apocalypse trilogy. And I think that was the first word that you said to me. Mm-hmm. It was like something about apocalypse trilogy. Mm-hmm. I was like, yes, this guy's in. The other two are The Thing and, of course, In the Mouth of Madness, one of my personal favorites from 1994.
I've still not seen it, and I need to watch that.
I'll send you home with it. Both very nihilistic.
I say nihilistic, but...
you can say it any word, right? Much like H.P. Lovecraft's work, kind of like the madness and such, all prevalent themes. Madness, you know, this film, we'll get into it. Screenwriter John Carpenter is credited as Martin Quatermass. A pseudonym is a homage to Professor Bernard Quatermass, the lead character in The Quatermass Experiment, and several other TV series and films. So classic sci-fi. Screen Factory actually put out an edition of that. Carpenter's love of science led to the story idea involving quantum mechanics and the crosswords of science and religion. Basically, he had read a bunch of books about this shit. He went like full on Joe Rogan with it, and, like, got deep. And he explains it was all mumbo jumbo anyway. It was just a big horror movie. Like, when he's like talking about explaining quantum mechanics, because you can't fucking explain any of that.
No.
How the hell did Alice Cooper become involved? This is actually interesting because he detailed it on the commentary, the director's commentary. He first met Alice Cooper at WrestleMania, strangely, and the performer shared his desire to be in a horror film. Carpenter agreed and said, "You can be in this movie if you let me use your impaling gag that he used on stage." So
nice.
That's how he was able, and his producer was also a producer in this film, so that's how he fucking shows up as the homeless, whatever he was in this movie.
Like a little homeless leader or something.
I have a feeling that was probably WrestleMania 3 that they probably met.
Probably.
Alice is part of that. Imagine Jake Roberts. I guarantee it was probably WrestleMania 3.
Was he really? He was a part of the wrestling?
He was managing Jake Roberts for that, for WrestleMania 3 in Detroit. In the Pontiac Silverdome. I guarantee you that's where Carpenter met him. I will put $5 on that. I really would.
And that's like, it's interesting because, and we've brought up a couple times wrestling and stuff, but Carpenter is even to this day, he's very big into wrestling. Mm-hmm. Like he goes to all the WrestleManias and shit.
Big into gaming too and all that. He's a gamer. I think you think a man almost pushing 80 years old would be like, he plays games? Yeah.
And like you said, like he's kind of like an old asshole, but like lovable, because somebody will be like, "What do you feel like about them making a new Halloween?" And he'll be like, "As long as they pay me." He's like, "I'm just going to keep on game." He was like, "Why would I direct anything else? I just want to fucking play my games." Okay, so I'll drop some more shit throughout the episode, but let's go ahead and start the discussion off, and I want to get your first take of this movie.
I'll tell you what it was. You told me about a month ago about this, and I said, okay, I'll watch it. Well, I spaced it. You sent me that message last night, and I saw the thing, and I'm like, oh my God, I forgot to watch the film. So I hustled, got on Amazon Prime, rented for like $3.99, and I was like, okay, I'm going to give it a chance. As I love Carpenter films, I'm like, why have I never watched this trilogy? So I'm watching it, and first off, the intro is really long.
Yeah,
for what it is, and I'm
longest
like,
credit sequence of all time.
It's like long, and I'm like sitting there watching. First off, I will point this out: when it comes to scores in horror films, no one does it better than Carpenter.
No,
in my opinion, there's not a single person that you can't deny it. Mm-hmm. Carpenter does a great job with that. Well, I'm watching it, and I see Donald Pleasance. I see certain people I've seen, and I'm like, watching what they're talking about, and I'm like, okay, like you see the professor and Pleasance talking, but you don't hear a word about it. You don't hear anything that's going on or nothing. And it's like, you could tell the tension's building up here.
When I watched it earlier, I actually thought the DVD was fucked up or something.
Right.
Like during that scene, I was like, is my Blu-ray out or like my TV out or
no,
what?
No, they're just kind of setting a mood. They're getting you intrigued, but you're also getting essential information. Like, but you don't have the time wasting of like hearing that dialogue of them being like, "I need your help. I need you. Oh, okay, I'll come." Like, you don't need to hear it to know what's happening, you know?
That's right. So slow at first and stuff.
It makes you think. I think as a fan, like, what are they talking about? What are they discussing? Is the world going to end? What are they talking about? This? Are they talking about that? There are certain things they're talking about, and you like, it's like that tension. Carpenter is good at that. Horror films like Carpenter build tension really well. They build throughout it.
Mm-hmm.
Where to the point it's like, okay, like this is good, this is great. That like, where's this going? Where's this gonna happen? How's this gonna happen? It's coming. And I think that's what you could feel like with the way that score is and that sound before the film starts, they show the producer and the director, and then it goes right into the film.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I think that like good pacing for it. Like when it starts out, then it's like quick. It hits you. It's like, okay, now we get going.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Overall, first impression after watching it the first time, you like it?
I did like it. I had some issues with it. But also, I think because I was up all night, I was tired. I was ready to go to bed. But I'm gonna watch it again, probably again later the year tomorrow when I'm sitting after I get done working out. I'll probably have it on play in the background when I'm making me some breakfast or something, my post workout meal, protein, bro. And I'll probably keep an eye on it for sure. Right. I'm gonna watch it a little bit better. But
I'm
like,
excited to get to the things that you said you like had you took issue with. We always like to put a little criticism in.
You have to.
Yeah, we should on these movies, but it's like, I love all these movies.
Yeah, like, we've never made a film.
Yeah.
We never made a film, but let's talk about what we would do differently. Yeah. You know what I mean?
It's like Carpenter messed up when he did this.
Right.
Kate, let's get your first reaction of Prince of Darkness. What a metal title, too. That's like one of the best titles ever.
I mean, I gotta say, I really enjoyed this.
All
right. I enjoyed the purposefully sort of confusing and I don't know if chaotic's the right word, but at times I guess it was. You know me. I typically, if you're a longtime listener, you know I really enjoy movies that I can figure out and there's like a logic and an understanding to it all. And this is the opposite of that. And it's like purposeful to the message of the film overall. And I gotta say, I really enjoyed it. And we'll get to the things I liked and the things that perhaps I didn't like as much, but I don't have much negative to say about it.
All right.
I must have been in a really good mood when I was watching it.
So it's a lesser known work from John Carpenter. Like you said, you had never seen it. And like, I think a lot of fans haven't seen this one though. And like in the Mouth of Madness, like they're just not like well known, like from his, and this actually came out in 4K. I'm gonna have to scoop it up. But it's one of those that I've always been partial to. I remember watching this at my brother's house, mm-hmm. and like, you know, I'm just like, what the fuck is going on? Like these people come together. And like I said earlier, like they're like, they're trying to stop this like big ass, like lava lamp or something. And it's like right. dripping up and like, there's just a bunch of weird shit going on.
Oh yeah.
And it's like this film. And one thing you can say for Carpenter, and this is going to be like just a Carpenter blowfest. I mean, let's be honest.
He's my favorite director too, so let's be honest.
But it's like one thing that he always does is like kind of like swing for the fences and like he goes out there in this movie.
I got the mm-hmm. sense from this film in comparison to the other Carpenter ones that you've mm-hmm. had me watch that this was one where he was like, I have a vision for this and I don't give a shit what anyone else says. I'm just mm-hmm. going to do it my way. I don't know if that's true, but that's, I got a vibe like it was very different than some of the other stuff.
Well, it's like with Carpenter, if you go back, like I'm going back to Halloween, that scene where Sheriff Brackett and Laurie Strode meet, it's mm-hmm. happening. If you look closely, there's a cloud of smoke comes in from the side. Smoking. Carpenter's smoking a cigarette. It was his film. He didn't, because Carpenter don't give a shit. When you see John Carpenter's, he lets mm-hmm. you flat out know, like, this is my film. I have creative control. Mm-hmm. John Carpenter's The Thing, John Carpenter's Halloween, John Carpenter's Prince of Darkness, John Carpenter's Vampires, which is a favorite of mine, by mm-hmm. the way. They Live. He makes it known like, yeah, I made these movies. Nobody gonna do shit about it either.
The commentary is like really funny because he's like, at one point he goes, I have no idea what any of this meant. I just tried to write weird shit. Because the guy that he's talking to is just like telling him the plot and he's like, is that what it's about? Or he was like, is that how it goes?
It almost is like, he read a Quantum Physics for Dummies and was like, I'm going to make a film about that, even though I don't get it. Because the point is that there's no point.
For sure. And I was going to ask Kate, like, what she thought the differences between this one and the other John Carpenter films were. Because you've seen Halloween, you've seen The Thing, you've seen Big Trouble. Big Trouble's kind of a little bit more on this scale, like, as far as indie kind of film. But what did you think the big differences between these were and how would this stack up against his other stuff?
That's tough.
Mm-hmm.
The Thing, to me, has such a powerful...
The Thing's just like
a
masterpiece.
It has so many powerful messages in it. With Halloween, to me, mm-hmm. it's kind of like the
ultimate, yeah.
Yeah, and maybe I guess I'd say I cared a lot more about the characters and like the central characters of his other films
mm-hmm.
than I do this one. And Big Trouble, because this, you don't really have time to bond with any of these characters except for a little bit the mm-hmm. redhead and the
she's
and
hot
the guy.
By the way. I'm gonna put that out there.
That redhead is hot. But yeah, I guess that would be the main thing is
mm-hmm.
I just didn't really care what happened to anyone in this because I didn't get to know them enough. Whereas in his other films, I think he builds those characters more.
And it's kind of like this is kind of driving home your point, but it's less of a character movie than it is like an idea movie, right? And it's
I would agree with that.
Mm-hmm. And that's one of the, mm-hmm. I would say like weaknesses maybe because there's not a lot to grasp on there. Maybe it's like a little cold.
So I didn't really buy the love, you know, connection between Catherine and Brian, which I only remember that off the top of my head now because my name's Catherine, my husband's name's mm-hmm. Brian. Anyway. but yeah, like you see him very creepily
mm-hmm.
watching her from afar. Maybe it seems a little stalkery. I know it probably wasn't meant that way. It was probably just you wanted to see that
he was checking her out.
You just wanted to see that he's pining after her
right.
and he Absolutely. Finally makes his move. He says sexist stuff. And it's not mm-hmm. funny. It doesn't land. And for whatever reason, she's like, I'll give him a chance anyway. And then all of a sudden, they're in bed. Like, mm-hmm. you don't see them build their relationship and you know, they're in bed. He's ready to say, I love you. And then by the end, he's like so devastated that she doesn't make it. Not to like jump too far ahead. But, you know, I just didn't buy it. I didn't feel for them.
What did you think about that?
That, well, first off, the sexist joke, I was sitting there going like, that's cringe, dude. Jeez. I was sitting there thinking, what? I thought that in my mind, like, I would never say that at all. Mm-hmm. But overall, when I first saw that, it's like, okay, Carpenter's going to do a little side story in this. It was kind of like with, it's hard to say because out of my Carpenter films, one of his top 10 films, I think. I think it's really good. It's in the bottom 10 for me. But I still got to watch A Mouth of Madness. There's some other films I need to watch of his I haven't seen in a while or whatever. But the one thing I didn't like with that was this dude was kind of like, first off, you had a mustache and you're a student, supposedly. And it's like, if you really look at these characters, they don't look young at all in a way. You know what I mean? Like, even the redhead chick is great looking. She was, you could tell, it's like she's in her 30s, and it seems like you're supposed to be.
To be fair, they're in PhD programs.
Gotcha. Okay,
so they could be older doing these programs, right?
Which is my thing. I was like, you think if you're going to do with college students, you would think like, okay, college, because I read the synopsis of what it was. Mm-hmm. I was like, okay, this is going to be interesting. I'm thinking, man, they look a little older, but then like you said that whatever. Yeah. But also, I feel like the guy was trying to give off too much of a Tom. Halloween 3, speak my mind.
Tom Atkins, yeah.
God rest his soul, but like with the mustache, the cool vibe and stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm like, this dude's trying Tom, like, feels like he's trying to do too much Tom Atkins in this. Mm-hmm. But that, I do agree. Like, they're like, well, maybe we can discuss like over dinner or something. And then they jumped from scene. I'm like, damn, that was easy.
Yeah.
Why can't it be easy for me? Shit.
Yeah. I'm just kidding. I mean, I'm just of the mind that this story, I don't think really even needed a romantic element at all.
I felt like if they had put if Carpenter put like maybe a little bit more like a sarcasm relationship with it, like them being hilarious back and forth with it, I think it would have felt better with the tone of the film.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like,
or show their friendship. Like, these people are colleagues, they're in the same program, like, they would be friends. And, you know, maybe they flirt a little, but I don't need to believe that Catherine's friends, including Brian, are devastated by the fact that she gets trapped in that dimension or whatever. I don't need someone to be in love with her to know that they're upset about it.
I feel you on that one. And it's like, we'll probably talk about that climax, because that's what I really want to talk about the most out of everything. And there's actually there's a couple scenes I thought don't age well. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I thought the thing about visually Carpenter, that idea, we talk about the you know, that crypt. I call it a crypt, basically, where all that ooze was. Mm-hmm. That scene where it's like shooting out of the wall, and like it gets in people's mouths, and it, like, you become a part of it. It's like, that's like interesting for sure. And some of the kills, you think for a horror film, there's not a lot of gore in it. There's not at all. It felt more science fiction more than horror to me. But I'm going off a tangent. But there's like the tension, like they're in that, like when the one character's trapped in that closet and they're trying to beat through the wall.
Oh, Walter.
And it's like, like you want to escape, but all of a sudden, like, they're going to come through the door now. You're going to hit the wall now. They're going to meet halfway.
I was saying the same thing. I was like, why hasn't he been chipping away at that wall?
Like, if I'm trapped and I got two women outside there staring at me with their eyes all bugged and everything else through it, I'm just sitting there going like, hey, man, like, I'm trying to get the hell out of there. Like,
I couldn't tell if I liked that he was just cracking jokes and, like, clearly.
It was a little too 80s.
Yeah, like,
very 80s. You could tell it's 87, 88-ish. It's late 80s. Very. Like, there's, like the one kill where that one dude, Wyndham, who was a prick, which I didn't mind. Because every horror film, you know, all right, this guy.
Yeah.
You know, the moment in. From the film, when they go downstairs, they see the crypt, and he comes back and goes, he said something about like shit stupid or something like that, or whatever. I'm thinking, yeah, he'll be dead within about 10, 15 minutes. Like, you watch a lot of horror films when it happens.
Speaking of creepy scenes, man, that scene when he like calls them from the window and he's like, pray for death. And then like it shows his head.
You
and
guys
he's all
are getting
up.
Way ahead of yourselves. Let's talk about the story itself.
Okay. Like, go ahead and give us a rundown.
Okay. I can do that. So, basically, you come in on these priests, and I guess the last priest that's part of this Brotherhood of Sleep, I guess he dies, and you know, now the church is like, what do we do? Mm-hmm. Like, they think that they have trapped away Satan, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been selling for millennia, or however long the religion's been alive. They've been selling that they, you know, Satan is not this physical thing. It's this, it just exists and it influences, but it's not a physical being, right? But what they actually have trapped down there in the green juice is what I called it,
mm-hmm.
Is Satan. So,
by the way, it's not Satan.
Listen,
I thought it wasn't Satan either.
No.
I rewound it and I wrote down these notes directly from the dialogue. So they basically, the church is like, something's happening, something's going on, something is forming,
mm-hmm.
and it's like, we're scared. Apocalypse is coming or whatever. We need the scientists to come and help us prove this,
mm-hmm.
and why, I don't know, but the scientists are going to help us stop it somehow by helping us understand it, because we have these texts that they can't translate, and so they mm-hmm. need people from the university with these expertise and stuff to come and help. So they bring, like, microbiologists, theology students with language degrees. Mm-hmm. They've got physicists of all different kinds, like mm-hmm. theoretical,
yep.
practical, you know, numbers people. I don't know, you name it.
I get what you're saying.
Yeah, they literally have an A-team of nerds.
Mm-hmm.
And
what's wrong with nerds? What's wrong with nerds, man? Really? Damn, just say it with your chest next time.
An A-team of nerds.
An A-team of nerds.
These nerds, okay, bub.
Listen, I consider myself a nerd, so
I'm proud of
it. I don't think it's a bad thing to call them a bunch of nerds, but they mm-hmm. are. And they're, you know, they're going to work, and they're doing this as fast as they can. Like, they've mm-hmm. just come together for a weekend, and they're hoping they're going to solve it all by then. The theology girl is translating these texts, and what she says, the texts say, is what's trapped in the green juice is Satan. His goddaddy.
Mm-hmm.
I called him his goddaddy because they didn't give it a name. But the goddaddy trapped Satan, his son, in this and buried him in the Middle East. And
I think that was a lie.
Well, listen, that's what the text said. And alien Jesus mm-hmm. comes to warn the humans and the church, I guess,
mm-hmm.
that's Satan in there. And the priests were protecting it. They then, you know, protected it and put it in this, like, crypt or whatever you want to call it. From the outside world until science was advanced enough
mm-hmm.
to prove that Jesus, alien Jesus, was right about it all.
Okay, so this is how you break that down. So what's written in there is what they thought was Satan. So this is from John Carpenter's mouth himself. So this is not the devil's son. It's the son of the anti-god. So this thing is called anti-god.
That's what it was, because... If you go, like, I'm sorry, go ahead, but
mm-hmm.
but no, like, when they're doing those texts on the computer, they're trying to figure out it's Latin terminology they're talking about, I believe. Mm-hmm. And I said, oh, they're talking about anti-gods, like not, I wouldn't say demo gods, but like somewhere, like, it's something that borderline, you know what I mean? Because mm-hmm. if you look at it, we'll jump ahead, but that scene where she's going, Father, and mm-hmm. like she's reaching, you see that big hand, like, that ain't Satan, that ain't Lucifer. That's
so,
not-
yeah, so they have this discussion about... down on the particle level of mm-hmm. atoms and stuff, there's particles, and then there's antiparticles. There's this mirror image that's like, the one is the positive, one's in the negative, the mm-hmm. yin, the yang, or whatever. So they put that in here, and this is where, like, you can talk about this movie a lot, but like, Carpenter himself clearly has said none of it makes sense. So we're trying to make sense of something that doesn't make sense, which is what the professor says in the first scenes.
But this goes along with that point.
Yeah.
So what makes sense to us is a good guy and a bad, right?
Yes.
What we have here mm-hmm. is something that's not even on that wavelength. So mm-hmm. it's like, it's this other, like, being kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you've got... time... I don't know if it's time travel, but it kind of is. Oh, like, yeah. You have people... from the future, telegraphing to them in their present reality through dreams. And it's all very, mm-hmm. like, there's no common thread tying it all together to me.
Right. No.
Other than, like, you know, I went off of, like, what was the text saying in the translations mm-hmm. and what was I seeing in the end? I was seeing a lot of biblical stuff in the end where, mm-hmm. like, I considered what was in that green juice a presence. They said it had a consciousness, mm-hmm. and it was able to possess by, you know, squirting juice in people's mouths, which is very gross.
I had a different terminology when I was thinking that, honestly. Yeah.
It's just like jizzing in everyone's mouth and turning them into demons. Well, like, it's just this hive mind, right? It's like they're all connected mm-hmm. and they're all this one being. And then something biblical, we actually just watched this in Constantine, where they're able to be trapped in mirrors. They get very distracted by a mirror. They're very narcissistic, whatever this being is, and you can trap it there. So to me, you have a mix of literally everything in this. You have religion, you have science, and I think that's kind of the point, right?
Yeah, that's what I think is cool about this movie, because it's like a it's a take on the possession film and like really the zombie film as well. But it's like not using the traditional like Satan and like God and like all this other shit. It's like,
it's all semantics though, really, isn't it?
Right.
It is, but it's like, I think it's even creepier that it's not like the devil. It's like, oh, it's not the devil. It's something else. Like,
well, God, anti-God, Christ, anti-Christ. It's the whole thing.
That's even creepier though, because it's like, it's not on those rules. It's like, you know, it doesn't play by those rules.
Yeah, and that's kind of the whole idea that the professor's talking about in the beginning. We, as human beings, like, we crave order and we crave understanding and we want to apply order to things that can't.
Right.
So, Shelby, one thing. Shelby, one thing that you brought up earlier was, and I think you hit the nail on the head, like, the opening is kind of like a slow burn. Like, I would say the first, like, 35, 40 minutes of this movie.
But like, yeah, absolutely. But not to cut you off. But like, when it goes after that, when you start seeing bodies drop, the scene that does not age well with me in this was when Wyndham's outside. He's being a prick, and he, you know, he's sitting outside, and then the hobos come up, and he gets trapped. Basically, the stabbing scene. It that I'm sitting there going, like, in the 80s, that would have got over, but it didn't age well. It didn't age well. Now, the after effects of what happened, that was the with the bugs falling out of them. And biting some, that was good. I'm like, okay, Carpenter put his twist on that. I can see. But the scene where the guy, you know, he gets trapped by those two girls and he starts to go up the stairs, which I think is creepy, when he's singing Amazing Grace.
Yeah,
that's and he's like, he's smiling, and you can tell he wants to cry, it looks like. I thought that was good. But the scene that got me the most when I knew shit was going on was Donald Pleasance. And you'll get this where I'm coming with this. Where the computers shut off. The computer shuts off and they go over. And Donald Pleasance gets that wide-eyed look and he grabs his Bible and he holds it to his heart. And I said, it's about to get good. Because Donald Pleasance, watching him over the years in the Dracula movie, you can see him in a couple of James Bond movies, but the Halloweens, obviously, and stuff like that. You know, when he gets that wide eye look and he turns a certain way, something's about to happen.
Yeah,
it's
he's
about
great,
to happen. You know what I mean? Like, it's that presence he has.
I feel like Carpenter does a good job in this, like, of upping the tempo with the score. Like, because, like I said, first 40 minutes, slow burn. And then he starts kind of putting that score, like, really in every scene. Boom, and boom, it just kind of speeds up and speeds up and speeds up. And that climax, it's like crazy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, it gets nutso. So it's like you got all these people that are turned into like kind of zombie kind of things. You got this fleshless, like, I don't even know what to describe it, like, with a wig on. I don't know. It's like a bloody chick with a wig on.
I want to add
that looks cool.
Well, it's cool. Like, it looks like a female version of Freddy Krueger, to be honest with you. But like, the thing that I thought, or that scene in Cabin Fever where he walks in and sees his girl sitting there.
Her lips are gone. Yeah.
By the way, you ever thought? That's why I stay out of the woods, people. But different, going off a tangent. But the thing that I thought was cool about that was the ooze was on the roof. Was on the roof, and it's coming, like, it's coming out of her or in. I couldn't tell if it was coming out of her or in her face or her eyes and her mouth.
Yeah, it was going like into all of the holes in her face. I think that's what you were meant to believe.
Yeah.
But I think to do the effect, they probably squirted it out.
Yeah. And like you see her, like, she's like pregnant, looks like, and it's just like, what in the hell? But it's Carpenter. You expect something like this. Like, where's he going to grab me with? That pleasant scene and that scene right there. that got me. I was like, okay, this is I can see why people like this film so much. Because mm-hmm. you look at the first, like the poster of it, it's a cool ass poster.
Oh yeah,
the advertisement for it. I'm thinking, okay, this is going to be interesting. And I'm thinking, I'm waiting. And then all of a sudden, when Pleasance did that part, I said after the bug scene, I thought, this is going to get good. This is getting good.
What do you think about that ending?
Well, I'm curious what you guys think.
Okay.
Don't let my opinion sway you one way or the other. Mm-hmm. But I don't think Catherine... Listen, I like that they gave her a choice mm-hmm. at the end where she could either save humanity or save this reality by taking out or like pushing the demon, whatever you want to call it, anti-god, I don't know, into the Prince of Darkness, mm-hmm. into the mirror realm, or, you know, saving her boyfriend. And she chose to save humanity. That's very, a woman would do that. Like I enjoyed the tension that they brought with that, of that, you know, hard choice that she had to make. And she sacrificed herself too. But I don't think she needed to jump in with it.
Like she thought the same thing.
She could have just pushed it in.
Yeah. Like how does she know what to do?
Well, I think anyway. I think it was like gut instinct, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I appreciate that. I think it's plausible that someone would see it reaching and pulling something in from this mirror mm-hmm. and, you know, logically say, okay, well, if I push it in and somebody shatters this mirror, then we're good. I've done something to save something, you know. But in the end, do I think it's more dramatic and theatrical, especially when you see that the little video...
this is not a dream.
The VHS tape kind of messages that come in people's dreams when mm-hmm. they're by this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like that was actually her in the doorway sending the message. Yes, I think that's really cool and it's very dramatic and theatrical. But like realistically, she could have just pushed it right in.
She could have pushed it right in. I thought, because my reaction was like, really? Like, mm-hmm. like first off, it wasn't a situation. Like I didn't see where she's running out of the hallway. She about gets tripped up. Then you see she's like looking, she's pulling her hair. I'm thinking, okay, this is 80s horror at its best. Yeah. Like, you know, dramatic. And I'm just like, what is she? I'm not thinking anything. I'm like, what is she going to do? Like, your boyfriend's going to be fine. Like, mm-hmm. get in there. And she shoved it and like... Donald Pleasance does that great scene where he just throws the axe.
Yeah, he's like, fuck it.
It shatters, and you see that, like, goes back, the scene that got me was, like, he shatters, like, oh, she's, and then you see her in the back, like, they cut a scene where she's reaching like this.
That was creepy.
Yeah. I thought, she's trapped. I'm mm-hmm. like, damn. Like, you know, I thought, it's like, well, that's cool. But what got me was, of course, he's all upset. The funniest thing was the other dude. As soon as that is over, he ran out of there, ran down the damn street. I thought that was hilarious. I was like, yeah. "Dude, I'm with you, bro.
Walters, everyone."
And of course, you know, they're in Pleasance is on a stretcher. Why? I have no idea. He didn't have anything harm done to him in it, but maybe because he's an old man, he's sitting there clutching his cross. Mm-hmm. He gets stretchered out, and you know, of course, the dude, he's sitting there, he's all distraught and stuff, and then this. But Carpenter at the end, after that VHS plays, he wakes up and he's got the bruise on his face and he turns and it actually got me. It's like, oh, there's that jump scare I was looking mm-hmm. for. I was like, at the end. And then the ending, I like that because at least what if, you know, what yeah. if when he reaches. But at the same time, thinking, you know what I mean? Like, I expect him a little bit more. Yeah.
So this is the, I felt like Carpenter did that brilliantly at the very end, because one of the things that always bothered me about like Inception, like using a movie like Inception, mm-hmm. and again, we're critiquing Nolan and Carpenter, which is hilarious, but it's like at the end of Inception, it's the end of Dark Knight Rises. Dark Knight Rises is what I'm thinking of. So when he sees, when he looks up and fucking sees Alfred at the cafe, I'm like, don't show it. Like, just leave it out there for the audience to like, either implant what we think is what we think we're seeing mm-hmm. like in that scene. And one thing that I thought Carpenter did brilliantly was, like you said, as soon as those fingers go up to the mirror, it's like, we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I assume they're all fucked still. Like, I mean, like using like a very nihilistic
mm-hmm.
kind of ending, much like The Thing, and you know, where you don't know who is the alien or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, we're fucked,
right?
Like, kind of thing.
Yeah, he loves right. an ambiguous ending,
mm-hmm.
and I'm here for that. That's okay. Right. I'm curious, before we get into favorite scenes, I know mm-hmm. we've touched on a few.
Oh yeah,
but who was your favorite character. I mean, there's a ton of cast in this, like in this ensemble. There's tons of scientists and all that. Like, who gave you your favorite performance?
Shelby, you can go ahead, man.
I think Pleasance is the reason why I watched this more than anything. Donald Pleasance is a horror icon. I mean, obviously with Halloween and just other films he's done, there really wasn't a character that really stood out. They all, there really wasn't one that made me go, oh, I want to see, I wish, like, there's certain characters in film that end up getting killed off or dying. You go and you're like, damn, like, you know, there wasn't one character made me go like, you know what I mean? Like, it did make me think, like, what if, are they, are, you know what I mean? Like, there wasn't one thing, like,
which was creepiest to you?
Like, the creepiest?
One thing about Pleasance, like, just to touch on that and then I'll answer. Pleasance, even when he's overreacting, like, even when he's overacting, it brings the movie forward.
Yes.
Like, it's like, it's just dramatic. Like, you know, his dramatic, like, when he's like, I think it's Halloween 2, when he's like, when he starts talking about, oh, he knocks on the door in Halloween 2, and he's like, you about scared me to death, like the neighbor did, and he's like, you don't know what death is. Right. And then the score kicks in as he's running down the road.
It's like in Halloween 5 when he goes when they're in like the Halloween 5 where he pulls his hand out and he goes, look at my hand, and he's like that pale look, like that look of concern on his face.
Yeah.
And he says, I can't remember what the quote was, but it was something of, I dreamed that every day he would burn hell, but I knew the demon would burn hell, but hell would not have him. Like, the way he delivered that line, if you give that to anybody else, they're not going to score and level with that. That scene where him and the professor in they're in the church chapel, they're talking in the office, and it's in the dark, and he scoots forward, and he starts talking, he gets into it, being Donald Pleasance. I'm thinking, this is getting, it's starting to, it's, they're teasing, it's about to amp up. They're really, but like I said, they're really, outside of Pleasant, there wasn't a character in this film that made me wish I want to see more of or anything.
Creepiest, I'm going to go the woman that is, that was impregnated by the anti-god and who's loses like all of her skin and shit.
Yeah.
That actually looked pretty cool. Like that,
she looked genuinely scary and like just like maniacally happy and like
like that certain,
so excited to bring, you know,
and that's what I'm saying. It's like
chaos and pain,
because it's like, it's not like and this is what I took it as, like, it's not like so much of a demonic thing. It's like this entity is like in one of our bodies now, and it's just like, what can I do?
End of the day, it's a possession of an evil thing.
It's a possession horror film. That's what it is. It has a lot of sci-fi to it. It thriller. I also will say, the USC campus atmosphere, I felt like that with the church, it outshined it. The way it was shot and how it was centered around, like when they were talking in the park about meeting up, and basically he's trying to fall in love with her after laying his eyes on her. Basically, when they meet up, it's like, like, this is just beautiful. Like, it's 80s Semina. You know what I mean? Like, there's a difference with, like, 80s Semina horror and 90s Semina horror.
Yeah.
It just, the way it's shot and the feel, the atmosphere, even though you really can't hear what they're saying, because Carpenter's score is what you the tension. Carpenter's score is what gives attention. The more, what I'm going to remember most from this film, if we're jumping ahead, Pleasance, obviously, the ending, but Carpenter's score to me is what is going to stand out the most. That score set the tone for the film, I think.
Have you listened to Carpenter's Lost Themes?
Yes, I have. I got on Spotify. I wish he would release the Vampires theme from like a Western that Vampires film he had with James Wood. It came out like late 90s. I had it on VHS, by the way. That's what shows you how old I am, but...
We're like both older than you,
right? Exactly. But like that scene where, like, you know, you hear that riff of the guitar and that they're walking through the thing, which is a cool. That's a film we ought to review.
Yeah, Vampires.
Yeah, because there's like people don't talk about it. They talk about Ghost of Mars more than they talk about Vampires, and I feel like Vampires is a better film.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know what I mean. Even though Ghost of Mars is cool. It's cool.
You don't like Ghost of Mars? Dude, I don't know.
It's got a great score and stuff. It's got Jason Statham and Pam Grier in it.
The scene when Ice Cube runs down the steps and he's just like,
hey, that's 2000s. That's 2000 action horror, man. But we're getting off on Ted. Yeah. We're getting off on
Kate, I'm sorry. We're getting off on a Carpenter. This is kind of a Carpenter episode, though.
Absolutely, pretty much. If you had to rank them, let me ask you this. If you had to rank it with Carpenter films, where would it be for you?
Well, the thing is his best film, I believe.
Is it high on the list? This one, is it high, mid, or low?
It's in my bottom 10.
I think it's mid.
Mid?
Yeah. I would put this after, I think it's after The Thing, Halloween. I fucking love Christine.
Oh my God, yes. Yeah. I forgot. That's right, he did direct it. Oh my God.
Yeah, Christine. I would put this like right there with They Live and stuff like that. Like They Live, Big Trouble in Little China and stuff like that.
If I go my top five with Carpenter, Halloween will be one for me. Mm-hmm. But Thing is two. I'm going to give Escape from New York some love in that, man, because people forget he made that, and that's still a great film to this day.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
That'd be number three. I like They Live a lot. Vampires is good. He would probably be in the bottom 10. I had to think about it more, but those are the five films. And they, I did say They Live, but...
Assault on Precinct 13.
Assault on Precinct 13 is good. Death Star is really good.
Oh, I forgot about The Fog. So oh,
yeah,
I would
Fog.
Go...
My God, yeah, The Fog. I'm sorry. Yeah.
So, yeah, I would go The Thing. This was what my list would be. My top three would be The Thing, Halloween, The Fog. That would be
enough.
My top three.
My top three for Carpenter will be Halloween, The Thing, and I'll go Escape from New York. Those would be the three films that I watch Carpenter. If I want to talk Carpenter, now there's a lot of stuff he's done, like he's an exit producer on. Like there's a film that came out a couple years called VFW. It's on Shudder. Yeah. I watched that with I watched that, and it actually has that. That's pretty good. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Halloween 2018 is part of it too. It's pretty good as well. So,
all right, let's get one favorite scene each before we get our final thoughts.
I think my favorite scene would probably, like I talked about, was when Pleasance. And the Bible scene where he's clutching the Bible. I also want to point out when he gets the balls with that axe and he says, I'm going to take this in my own hands, finally. That scene's pretty cool. I think that's probably the two scenes that stood out to me through the film.
Mm-hmm. So I would go,
Do you want me to go?
Yeah, go ahead.
Gotta get. This isn't one of the big theatrical ones. Of course, I love Alice Cooper impaling the dude on the bike and stuff. But
that was a badass kill, by the way. That was a badass kill.
You know, and
the
guy,
bird like taped or what is
it?
Cross.
It was a crucified pigeon.
Crucified pigeon. I thought that was
like,
creepy.
Listen, that was great. But this isn't one of those scenes where there's a big like a kill or an effect. Really, it's pretty simple actually. But I actually kind of got chills when I saw it. So this is the scene. After the theologist who's translating the script or the scripture, it's after she has been possessed and she's sitting. Yeah, she's sitting at the computer and she's just typing, and it says, "I live, I live, I live, I live, I live," over and over again. And she's it's got a very Shining vibe to it.
Thank you.
It was so creepy, and the guy just like observing her, and you know, you see the realization of that something's wrong come on his face, and then you see. On the screen, it says, you will not be saved by the Holy Ghost. You will not be saved by the God Plutonium, which is like essentially saying science. In fact, you will not be saved. And then, you know, something dramatic happens after that. I forget. It's like she must attack him. I forget. But regardless, the tension in that scene and how just freaky she looked and that Shining vibe was just really good. That was probably my favorite.
By the way, it's really, really cool, like, how they did the mirror thing. So they did the mirror thing because they drained the mercury. Like, I read up on this today. They drained the mercury out of the cameras and then were able to create that effect of, like, them dipping their kind of fingers through a mirror from the mercury.
Really
dangerous. Yeah. I mean, it was 80s. So my favorite scenes in this, and I think one of the creepiest parts of this movie is like the dreams, and the way that he did this was like he filmed it with like a VCR kind of camera, and then he filmed the TV like playing the VCR kind of camera's tape or whatever. But I just think that like what does he say? He says this is not a dream or whatever, and then it like kind of just pans over. Like throughout the movie, we're seeing these dreams. Everybody's having the same dreams, and you see that figure in the fucking doorway.
Yeah,
but it's just
a silhouette.
It's just like,
it almost looks like it's a robed figure at first, and then you find out at the end it comes more into view, and it's Catherine's figure.
Yeah,
and she's coming from the future. Whatever realm she must be in, who knows? Maybe she gets out of that realm and she's sending this message back. Like, who even knows? Like, maybe she went into that mirror and somehow was able to travel to a totally different reality. Like, there is no logic to this at all.
So, Shelby, now's the time. I want to give you. I want you to give a rating out of 5 to Prince of Darkness?
I'm going to give it a 3.7 out of 5. All I right. think it's a, on a, I usually go on 10s if I rank films because mm-hmm. it's a 5, just a slow score, but 3.7 out of 5, I feel like it's a team of, if you, a film you would want to stream it first, like on Amazon and rent it, or if you can borrow it, not borrow for somebody or something like that, watch it before you buy it, because you might watch it and like it more than I do. I like it. I just feel like that first 40 minutes, it just beats you. That it's like, Jesus, come on. But also, it's like, I also had been up all day from work and stuff, too. And I was trying to get a nap in before I came so I could have a nap before I go to work tonight and do this. So I did like it. But like I said, after that first 40 minutes, it does kick it up. It takes its time, but it goes. It goes.
Kate?
I'm probably going to be even a little easier on it than Shelby. I think 4 out of 5 for me.
Okay.
Because I think it's rewatchable. Like, I'm actually curious if I get a chance to see it again. Like, maybe Trav can host a little movie night with people or something, and I'll come watch it again. I think it's too soon for me to watch it again. But I want some time to pass. I want a noodle on it, and then I want to watch it again and see if there's any, like, just little things I missed that can help I don't know what the right word is, but basically kind of strengthen the plot a little bit, or strengthen kind of the theme and the message for me. Overall, I enjoyed it. It's very different from something I would say I liked. It's certainly not one that I would like put on my list every year to watch. Like, for that, that's what you need to get a 5 in my book. Like, it has to be one of those absolutely rewatchable.
Like, I will, like, things. Not to cut, like, to add on to it, like, I'm not beaten to death, but I would rewatch it again. I just wouldn't jump right back into it. It's not a film like, did I miss anything? Did I miss this? Did I miss that? It's not one of those films like that for me. It's not like if I watch, I don't know, I like horror films anyway. Like, it's like watching the extra, like a long standing plot of a film that's like over 2 hours long. You're thinking, did I miss anything? Did I miss?
Right.
This film, the first 40 minutes is just, it's simple dialogue. It's a heavy ass score. And it's just, you're sitting there like, wait, like, okay, what's this fountain of ooze that Ivan Ooze would be jealous about? Yeah. And you're wondering what's going to happen. You know what I mean? But I like her score, I can see where she's coming from. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I would like to see, like, I would like to see if there's any, for instance, any subtle things in the background happening with, like, because there's so many characters in this. Sometimes you're paying attention to one, but there could be something going on the side of the room, you know, or like even some of the jokes in the dialogue, like the humor sprinkled in. Like, I didn't catch a lot of Walter's jokes. I think I remember him saying one, like, "Oh, that'll fuck up your weekend" or something like that.
Yeah.
I like that. But like, those are the things I didn't pay too close attention to.
I had a date the night with this hot chick or whatever, and the guy goes, "What's his name?" Like, or something. Like, it was something like that.
Yeah.
And I like, wait a minute. I like, huh?
Yeah. It was like, Walter was very like 80s kind of. I don't know. It almost felt like he was doing like a They Live or like Big Trouble thing in this movie with Walter. It was just weird. Like, some of his jokes didn't. Like, when those two chicks are going after him, like, nobody would be joking.
Yeah,
you like, wouldn't. These two beings are after,
like,
you.
First off,
you're not going to pull them out of whatever is possessing them, like,
I will
by
also,
telling a joke.
Also, I'll point out, I'm going to give props to the first one who gets possessed. The look on her face, her
eyes.
Yeah,
that chick was creepy.
And her, with they put some makeup on to make her look real palish, I thought. I'm like, if I woke up to that, I would be frightened. Like, the other one, I believe she was Asian.
Yeah.
She was, like, she just had that look on her face. Like, it was nothing creepy. But she stood out, just stood there, broad shoulder, and her eyes are like this. I thought that was stood outfish. But I'm like, if I woke up to that, dude, I'm not joking or nothing. Like, I'm grabbing something.
Yeah, I'm scared.
I mean, absolutely.
What about you, Travis?
Yeah, so this would be a 4 out of 5 for me as well. One thing I meant to bring up is, like, this in my opinion is like Carpenter kind of doing like a film more in line of like what the Italians were doing, like Dario Argento and like not so much Lucio Fulci, like maybe a little bit, but like Dario Argento, maybe like with Phenomena and stuff like that, where it's like, and I only, what I mean by that is like, it's kind of like plot is out the window and it's more about like feeling and atmosphere and like, you know, some of the shots of the movie and stuff. But yeah, this would be like a 4 out of 5.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, style over substance.
Oh,
kind
someone
of thing.
We didn't even give a good shout out to was the guy who played Calder.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
he was
yeah.
the microbiologist who was singing Sweet Low, and then he stabs himself in the throat.
Yeah,
well, yeah. We can't end this without talking
well,
about
yeah,
that.
Well, yeah, he's I recognize him. He's been in some other horror films, and also I would say another scene we'll get a lot of credit where they come up and he's sweating.
Oh yeah,
and he sits down. And he goes, and he just turns with that frightened look on his face. Like, you feel like it's coming. That's one thing I always about Carpenter's pacing with this. Mm-hmm. The first 40 minutes drags, mm-hmm. but it slowly after that, it yeah. picks and picks and picks and picks. Mm-hmm. I feel like if Carpenter, and also another thing I would say, if it had a little bit more gore, like a little bit yeah. more blood, like that scene where they tease you when he gets impaled with that bike where by Cooper, you know, the character gets killed, you it teases you like, oh, we could get some blood. After that, you don't. We got one more scene and mm-hmm. a woman that's all like disfigured. Outside of that, you don't see a lot of blood in this, which maybe it doesn't need that. But I feel like if you had add a little bit there, mm-hmm. maybe the Carnage Candy would have helped me out and get to a 4. You know what I mean?
I agree.
That's fair, but I think for me, I don't think that this entity had any interest in, you know, going above and beyond to torture or. To create these, you know, theatrical, mm-hmm. disgusting, gory scenes, you know, like you think of a devil or a demon mm-hmm. wanting to do because they get pleasure from that. This, I think it had one purpose, and it was like, I got to bring Auntie God Daddy through the mirror. And like, it just was like, if it knocked you out, it was good with that.
I got you. I got you.
Yeah, so that is our take on Prince of Darkness. Shelby, I want to thank you for joining us. This has been a fun discussion, man.
All right, no problem.
It's always fun absolutely. To sit across from another horror fan, another horror freak like myself, horrorhead as I like to call us.
Absolutely.
So my book recommendation this week is Tales for a Halloween Night. I think the new edition should be coming out this month. But it's John Carpenter's Tales for Halloween Night.
I like
but
the
this,
cover on that.
That is a dope. That's
yeah.
Last Horseman?
So this is the Volume 5, yeah. Mm-hmm. So this is the Volume 5 Anniversary Edition. So this is like every year Storm King Comics, which is John Carpenter's like comic label. This is like a bunch of like just short stories that are Halloween based. So mm-hmm. Taking place on Halloween night or near Halloween night. But a lot of these are just like very short, very fun, kind of creep show like. Stories, but yeah, that's my book recommendation this week. Shelby, thanks again.
No problem.
It's been a blast.
Appreciate you guys having me.
Theme Queen, thanks as always. you can find us on Facebook and Instagram at Horrifying My Friends and on Twitter at Horrifying MF. Hit me a line. Tell me what your favorite John Carpenter film is. I would probably put Prince of Darkness at like 4 or 5, but tell me where you would put it. Is it your favorite film? Tell me. Hit me a comment. On Twitter at Travis Ybarra, and you know, just shoot me a text or you know, shoot me a comment on Facebook at Travis Ybarra as well. But yeah, thanks everybody for listening. And spooky, spooky month of October is upon us.
Fair time of the year, absolutely.
Till next time, bye.
Fine, my friends.